We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hello, Lakers Nation. Welcome into the LakersNation.com podcast. I am Trevor Lane. You can find me over on X at Trevor_Lane, on Instagram and Threads at TrevorLaneNBA. We've got a lot to talk about on today's show. We got to recap the road trip. 5-1 on the trip. We'll take it. I want to talk a little bit about that. Need to get into some stats that I think are pretty revealing about why the Lakers have been successful, particularly since the All-Star break. I want to talk a bit about that as well. Need to, of course, get into the standings. The Lakers actually got a little bit of help. Finally, hallelujah, got a little bit of help last night in the standings. We'll take a look at what that means and take a look at what's to come, because, oh boy, look, if you enjoy chaos in the standings, I think you're going to be very excited with what's coming up over the next week and a half or so. And then I want to talk a little bit about the Lakers playoff rotation. So that's where we're headed on today's show. I want to kick things off, though, talking about the Lakers road trip. You know, first of all, big thank you to Jeff Spiegel and Sean Davis, who did a phenomenal job holding things down on the Lakers Nation Live podcast after Lakers Wizards. I appreciated that. Got to get out with family a little bit. So they absolutely crushed it. Did an amazing job. Super appreciative of them. I'm not going to rehash too much of what happened in the Wizards game. The guys did a great job covering it already, and it was kind of what we expected to see happen. It wasn't an impressive win for the Lakers. Yeah, there were some frustrating moments there. LeBron and AD having to sub themselves. That's right, sub themselves back into the game. Darvin Ham didn't sub them in. They said they subbed themselves back in late in order to close the game out when the garbage time ended. The bench guys couldn't seem to hold on to a lead. That was not ideal, but otherwise the Lakers, they took care of business. They did what they needed to do. They got the win. It was ugly, but it's a trap game. It's the way it goes sometimes. End of a road trip, it's what happens. But in second night of back-to-back as well. So I'm not going to spend a bunch of time on Wizards, but the Lakers road trip in general, 5-1. 5-1. Like, we could not ask for anything better than that. And I know people will say, well, they should have beat Indiana. Yeah, look, if they shot an average percentage from three, they beat Indiana too. And we're talking about a 6-0 road trip. And we'll take a look in a minute at what that would mean in the standings. But I can't be upset. I can't be upset with a 5-1 road trip. I mean, this is, again, this was the best case scenario in our minds going in, was we said at least they need to be 4-2. But ideally, they'd be 5-1. They did it. They're 5-1. And you look right here on the screen, if you're watching over on the YouTube channel, I've got, by the way, if you're on YouTube right now, do me a favor, hit that like button real quick. Just hit the like, get this video out to as many people as we can. And then over on the podcast side, leave us a 5-star rating and review over on Apple Podcasts. Great way to help out the show. But you look at what the Lakers have done recently. And yeah, at the top of your screen, you can see the losses to Sacramento, the losses to Golden State. Those hurt. They lost some games post All-Star break to teams they really needed to beat. Things would look a lot different in the standings had they lost, say they lost to Philly, but beat Golden State. Say they lost to Milwaukee, but beat Sacramento. Just adjusting, not adjusting their win total, but adjusting which teams they won against would change a lot in the standings as well. Unfortunately, they pushed wins onto their direct opponents records and losses onto their own, and that's hurting them right now. But overall, you look at this, I mean, it's hard to be upset here. Since mid-March, they've lost once. They have a 5-game win streak broken up by one loss to Indiana and then a 3-game win streak. They're 8-1 in their last 9 games. They're playing extremely well. And you look at some of these teams in here and you say, well, Philly without Embiid, the Hawks aren't very good. Milwaukee beat them in double overtime. That showed something. Second night of a back-to-back against Memphis, but Memphis isn't very good. All right, you lost a game to Indiana. Brooklyn's not good. Toronto's not good. Washington's not good. Did they have the advantage of an easy schedule? Yes. Yeah, no question. They had the advantage of a light schedule. I mean, look at that. Atlanta, Philly, no Embiid. Memphis, Brooklyn, Toronto, Washington. Those are all teams that you would expect to be at best 500, if not below 500 on the season. If you had Philly without Embiid all season, they're probably maybe just barely above 500. So they took advantage of a light schedule, but you can only play the teams that are in front of you, and the Lakers did a great job. Now, I'll tell you one thing that I like, and it's a little bit misleading because of the teams that you're playing, but the Lakers, over the 6-game road trip, have actually been 6th in the NBA in defensive rating. And that's not to say that I think all their problems are solved defensively, because they're not. I think that's the biggest weakness of this team right now. It's part of the reason why they need Jared Vanderbilt back. Fingers crossed, we're supposed to get, according to Darvin Ham, we're supposed to get some news on him early this next week. We'll get an update on Vando. Really, it could come anytime. We'll get an update on him and find out if he's able to ramp up. What I'm looking to hear, personally, what I want to hear is he's cleared for contact. That's the important thing. Is he cleared for contact? Because that will get him back into practice. The Lakers, they have a few breaks in their schedule where they don't have a game or a back-to-back. They don't have a game every other day, even where they could get in some practice sessions, get him out there. I think that's going to be important. And I'll talk a bit more about Vando when we get to the playoff rotation. But their defense being 6th in the NBA in defensive rating, again, yes, you've played some bad teams. That's absolutely a factor. But I do still think that's a good sign that they're starting to pick things up a bit there. The attention to detail, the focus, it is, while not completely consistent, it's more consistent now, and that's going to be critical. I've been talking about this a lot, that as great as the offense has been, as fun as it is, when D'Angelo Russell goes on a heater and he's just draining threes left and right, it's a blast, right? It is a blast. This team offensively has been great. I'm going to get into how great they've been in just a moment, but you have to be able to defend. You have to. The old saying is defense wins championships, and it still holds. Even in today's NBA, where teams live on threes, you have to be able to defend at a decent level. And for a while there, they were stuck at 28th in the NBA defensive rating for a long time. Post All-Star break, just they could not get stops at all. It was awful. And again, part of this is their schedule has been lighter. They're playing teams that aren't very good. That's going to make your defense look better. But I don't think that's everything. I think their defense has been more locked in lately. It's been more focused. That doesn't mean they're good there. I'm talking about, can they get to being just passable? That's what I'm looking for right now. I don't think it's realistic to assume they're going to go from 28th in defensive rating to top 10 or anything like that. I don't think it's going to happen, despite them being 6th over this stretch. Again, they've been playing bad teams. But what we're looking for is, can they be a respectable defense? That's it. That's it. I know it's a low bar, but that's the best we can hope for right now. That's the best we can hope for, that the offense continues to be elite, and that's what it's been, and then your defense can at least be respectable. Then you've got a shot. If you're off, your offense can be great, but if you're 28th in defensive rating, you're going nowhere. You're not. You're going nowhere if you are 28th in defensive rating. So the Lakers defense starting to turn things around a little bit. That's a good sign, and hopefully they get a boost from Jared Vanderbilt when he's able to return. Now, I did say I had some fun stats. So let's take a look at this. And I think this is pretty amazing. So heading into the season, if you told me D'Angelo Russell would be 13th in the NBA in three-point percentage, I would have said, okay, yeah, I buy that. But Rui Hachimura right now is in the top 10. In fact, he is 9th in the NBA in three-point percentage for the season. Rui is. Unbelievable. Rui Hachimura, and I need to talk about this for a moment. I need to talk about Rui Hachimura, because this is a guy who, during the trade deadline, there were teams, when discussing Rui Hachimura, would say, no, he's, you know, we're not interested in taking on the extra years on his deal. Rui Hachimura's contract, $15.7 million this season. $17 million next season. Yeah, I'll show you what it looks like. And then the season after that, he's at $18.2 million, $18.3 million. We round up, right? So that's his contract. That's Rui Hachimura's deal. And there were teams that looked at that and went, yeah, well, I don't know. I don't know if he's worth that much money. Yeah, maybe that's a bit much. Top 10 in three-point percentage on the season. Rui Hachimura. That's where he's at right now. Guarantee you, there's teams that are kicking themselves. And I guarantee you the Lakers are happy they didn't move him. He's been fantastic. Give you guys an idea of how good Rui Hachimura has been. The month of March, 59% from the field, 47% from three, five boards, which I like that the rebounding is improving. We're going to talk more about that in a minute too. 17.3 points for Rui Hachimura. April so far, just two games, but 50% from three, 71% from the field. Good Lord, Rui. He's been fantastic. And here's the thing. You're going to look at that and you're going to say, Rui, that field goal percentage is not sustainable and all that sort of stuff. And you know what? You're right. You're right. It's not sustainable. You're not going to shoot 70% from the field. That's ridiculous, right? You're not going to do that. Not when you're a three-point shooter, jump shooter, all that kind of stuff. Not going to do it. So that's fine. But I don't think it's out of the question for him to continue to be very, very good. I don't think it's out of the question for Rui Hachimura to continue to be an extremely efficient player. And you look at the Lakers starting five, and again, this is going to tie into our conversation in a moment about the playoff rotation, but you look at the Lakers starting five, and this is what Rui is capitalizing on. And this is why now I'm starting to shift my position that when Jared Vanderbilt comes back, and this is for a few reasons, I don't think you change the starting lineup if you're the Lakers. I don't think you do. I think you change the rotation a little bit. I think you get Rui in with the bench unit a bit to give him that scoring punch, but I don't think you change the starting five. Because here's what's happening. Here's what's happening right now is you're seeing teams that are making Rui the designated shooter. Dude's top 10 in three-point percentage, and they're making him the designated shooter. Why? Because it's LeBron, it's AD, it's D'Lo, it's Austin Reeves. Those are the other guys on the floor. And so when teams are having to pick their poison, they're going, oh man, well, we've seen D'Lo blow up for 44 points. We don't want to let him get going. Austin is versatile enough. He's a multi-level scorer. He can score from all three levels. You don't want to get him going. He can get into the paint. He can create things. Anthony Davis, that's Anthony Davis. You can't leave him. And that other guy just might be the greatest of all time. Maybe the GOAT. Can't leave him. Right? So Rui Hachimura becomes the forgotten man. And he's taken advantage of it. And so that's why when I look at Rui's field goal percentage, it's easy to look at it and say, well, that's an outlier. He's not going to be that good. And maybe you can even say the three-point percentage. He's shooting a little bit above his head. How many open looks is he getting right now? How many dunks is he getting right now? How many times are we seeing per game where Rui sneaks along the baseline because everybody's paying attention to the other guys on the floor more than him, and he gets a nice little drop-off pass and a dunk, or he attacks an emergency closeout and gets to the rim and finishes? All of those high probability scoring chances, those are going to increase your field goal percentage. So when I look at how well Rui is shooting, you might be able to look at it and say, he's just on a heater. I actually think there's a little bit of sustainability to what Rui is doing right now. Now, is he, again, a 70% field goal guy forever? No, he's not. But him being a highly efficient scorer, I think is very sustainable for this Lakers team, because not only is he good, I mean, that's the most important thing, right? He's good, he's talented, he can score the basketball, but on top of that, he's in a situation where he can take advantage of it. I love how often the Lakers, when they get a team in rotation and a team tries to like hide a small on Rui, the Lakers' eyes light up. They just go, cool, here you go, Rui. And they throw him the ball and they let him go to work against a dude who's 6'2", 6'3", something like that. And he does a nice job. So when I look at Rui Hachimura and these stats, he's top 10 in three-point percentage, he's shooting the ball so well and all that, I think, yeah. Like, when you actually get into what's happened on the floor, it makes sense. It makes sense. All right, but another cool set of stats here. Anthony Davis On the season, he's fourth in the NBA in blocks. Fourth in blocks, plus third in rebounds, plus tied for third in steals among centers. Think about that. We talk about how good he is defensively. Fourth in blocks, third in rebounds, third in steals at his position. That's pretty impressive. And then on top of that, for the guy that gets called Mr. Glass and all this street clothes, all these kind of ridiculous nicknames, played in 72 games this season. He's missed five games all season. He's been fantastic. You can't ask for more. Are there frustrating nights or the nights when you say, come on, you can't get bullied by Sabonis and stuff like, yeah, there have been some moments like that this season. But overall, Anthony Davis has been phenomenal. And I'm not talking about just pulling his counting stats. I'm talking about how he compares to the rest of the NBA at the things that guys at his position do. Block shots, rebound. He throws in steals for good measure. He's also one of the top free throw shooters on the season. Anthony Davis has been fantastic. I think he's getting overlooked to some degree because the Lakers are the ninth seed, which we're going to look at in a minute. We're going to take a look at the standings. We're going to see that, yeah, they're still stuck in the ninth seed. There is hope that they can move out. But context says this is a non-normal season in the Western Conference. I would say it's an outlier season, but I think next season is going to be the same way. So you look at how much the Lakers have been winning. You look at their win percentage right now. They should be much higher than ninth. If this were last season, they would be significant. They'd be the four seed, maybe the three seed at this point. They'd be up there. I mean, easy. We wouldn't be talking at all about are they in the play-in or anything. No, they would be locked into a playoff spot in a normal season. But this season, in this year's Western Conference, they're still a nine seed. And unfortunately, I think that because of that, Anthony Davis isn't getting the attention that he should. See, if the Lakers were the three seed, Anthony Davis is getting Defensive Player of the Year love right now. AD is getting talked about in that conversation right now if the Lakers were the three seed. And it's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. Individual awards should not be so closely tied to team success. It shouldn't be. You want to make that a tiebreaker? Cool. That's fine. You want to make that a tiebreaker? Team success? Fine. You get two players. You got two guys that are both right there, both neck and neck for MVP or something, and you want to go team success? Okay. All right. I'll go there. But otherwise, I don't think we should have individual awards tied to team success because basketball is a team sport. You can be great. You can be the best defensive player in the world. If the four guys around you are not good defensively, you're not going to be a good defensive team. Does that mean you are a bad defender? No, of course not. The Lakers haven't been a bad defensive team because of Anthony Davis. Not at all. Anthony Davis has been a phenomenal defensive player. And you can make arguments for other guys this season. I'm just saying it's unfortunate that Anthony Davis isn't getting the love there. He'd probably even be in the MVP conversation if the Lakers were the three seed. I'm not saying he would win it. I'm just saying his name would be getting tossed in there if the Lakers were the three seed, which most seasons they would be. Four seed at worst. Unfortunate. But take a look at the rest of this. This is crazy. They're second in the NBA in points in the paint since the All-Star break. Second in the NBA in points in the paint. Indiana's number one. Why? Is it because they're so dominant inside? No, it's because they beat everybody down the floor and they get points in the paint in transition. That's something that a lot of times we think of points in the paint as just, oh, you need a big, strong, physical team, pound the ball inside, and that's all you have to do. And there is some truth to that, but the super fast teams also get a lot of points in the paint because they beat teams down the floor and they get those fast break scoring opportunities. So they get layups and dunks off of that. But second in the NBA in points in the paint, they are second in the NBA in pace as well. So they are playing at a very fast pace. And they're second in three-point percentage. Think about that. You are one of the best teams in the league at scoring at the rim, and you are the second most efficient three-point shooting team in the league. That's incredible. And some of that is, of course, credit to Rui. Top 10, three-point percentage. Credit to D'Angelo Russell, who's right there. LeBron James has been shooting the hell out of the ball this season from three. Credit to those guys, right, for shooting the ball so well. But that's a big piece to why. People say, why is the Lakers' offensive rating so high? Why are they so good offensively? Because they're great in the paint and they're great shooting threes. Typically, you can find teams that are good at one or the other. The Lakers are great at both. They're great at both. Now, they only are 29th in three-pointers attempted per game, so they don't shoot a lot of threes, but they're great at hitting them. And then here, I like this. The Lakers are 6th in the NBA in free throw attempts per 100 possessions, so you remove pace out of things. Per 100 possessions, the Lakers are 6th in the NBA in free throw attempts, despite being 29th in three-pointers attempted. So the reason why I put that in there is because when you're taking a lot of threes, you're not taking a lot of shots at the rim. Shots at the rim tend to lead to more free throw attempts, right? You tend to get fouled more the closer to the basket that you shoot. So the Lakers, for all the people, all the conspiracy nut jobs out there that are saying, oh, the Lakers, they just get more free throw attempts. The NBA is cheating. The NBA is rigged. First of all, watch a Lakers game. Watch a game. That's all you got to do. You really want to figure out what's going on. You're sitting there scratching your head. You can't understand why the Lakers shoot more free throws than their opponents do. It must be, clearly, must be because the NBA is rigging things for the ninth-seeded Lakers, right? They've been rigging things all season. That's why the Lakers are sitting in the ninth seed, right? Right? That makes a lot of sense. People jump onto this idea that, oh, you know, the Lakers, they just parade to the free throw line every game. No, watch the game. That's all you got to do. You'll see exactly what's happening. It's easy to see why they shoot more free throws than their opponents do. But on top of that, the stats say there are five teams that shoot more free throws per 100 possessions than the Lakers do.
If you're a basketball junkie, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Twice a week, JJ Redick is cooking on his podcast, The Old Man and the Three. He has guys come on in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, including Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron in Miami, and the moment Tyrese Halliburton knew Pascal Siakam would be a good fit in Indy. In addition to player interviews, every Monday, JJ breaks down the top three things happening around the NBA with unmatched analysis, not outlandish takes, and is often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler to dive deep on rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is mean mugging now a tech? You won't find another outlet that covers the game as comprehensively and with such insight as JJ does it on The Old Man and the Three. Make this your companion podcast during the playoffs. Listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
There's no conspiracy here. It's no secret. It's no mystery, unless that's what you're looking for. Thought I'd throw that in there, just for the haters. And then the Lakers are playing at the second fastest pace in the NBA since the All-Star break, and are second in true shooting percentage during that stretch too. They also, and I think this is important, they're seventh in opponents' offensive rebound percentage during that stretch. So since the All-Star break, they're not giving up the offensive rebounds to opponents. And I think there's a few reasons for that. So this was a problem early in the season. It's been something that's reared its ugly head a number of times. We've talked about the Lakers, the second chance points they've given up. We've talked about how the Lakers don't have enough size on this roster, how they could use another center. All those things are true. And I think they probably still do need to find another center out there on the market this summer. But one of the things that we've been seeing is the guards have been doing a better job. And I don't know if this is, we should be crediting Darvin Ham here, who probably, let's be honest, Darvin Ham can get a lot of blame for a lot of stuff, but he deserves credit in some areas too. And you see what's happening with this team. I don't know if it's something that's changed with Darvin that's switched things here, but Darvin Ham, the Lakers, they are rebounding the ball much better than they used to. And specifically, I look at Austin Reeves, 5.6 rebounds per game post All-Star break, 5.6. So he's really getting in there and rebounding the ball. He was at 3.9 pre. It's been that, and that backs up the eye test. We've seen a number of times Austin has really helped to take care of those mid-range rebounds that have been so problematic. And remember, offensive rebounds are death in today's NBA because offensive rebounds tend to lead to open three-point attempts for your opponent because your defense is scrambled, they're scattered, they're out of position. Offensive rebounds tend to mean wide-open three-point attempts, which is, again, is death in today's NBA. So the fact that the Lakers have now cut their opponent's offensive rebound percentage down to seventh, they're ranked seventh since the All-Star break, that's really important. That's really important to preventing those second-chance scoring opportunities, and Austin Reeves has been a big part of that in helping out on the boards. Rui's rebounding has gone up as well. So there's been a renewed focus and commitment to rebounding from this Lakers team. That's not to say it's perfect, but it was a big area of concern that they have since cleaned up. Now, hopefully that's something that continues. All right, I did say we're going to take a look at the standings. Let's do it. Let's take a look at where things are currently at in the standings. Now, I said the Lakers got a little bit of help last night. Good news. Sacramento Kings lost. Look at that. Look at that. Thank you, Knicks. The Lakers just half a game back of the Sacramento Kings now. And the Warriors unfortunately won, giving the Lakers not a lot of breathing room. That Lakers-Warriors game that we've got coming up pretty soon looms large. But good news, Sacramento Kings lose. Now, remember, when we're looking at this, though, right now you've got the Lakers half a game back of Sacramento. It's really like there's an extra game back there, though, because the Sacramento Kings have the tiebreaker. So even if the Lakers, let's say Sacramento loses their next game, even if that happens and the Lakers and Kings are tied in terms of record, it's not going to matter. Kings would still be ahead. But the fact that you finally got one of these West teams to lose, that helps. You also look at New Orleans. They've lost three in a row. That helps. I've been of the mindset for a while now that the Lakers were not catching the Pelicans. In fact, it was just, what, a week ago? The Pelicans were the four seed. And they were winning games, and it looked like they were going to take the four seed away from the Clippers. That was the path the Pelicans were on. But they've lost Brandon Ingram. Zion Williamson is now dealing with a finger injury, although that sounds like something that's day-to-day, and they're dropping fast. They're now the seven seed, the Pelicans are. And just a game and a half back or up on the Lakers. Now, that one is particularly interesting. Because, again, I had not been factoring in the Pelicans much in my analysis. Haven't been looking at them a lot. But now, I think they are maybe the Lakers' best shot at moving up. And the reason for that, and we're going to look at the schedule in just a moment, but the reason for that is because the Lakers, not only do they have an opportunity to get the tiebreaker over the Pelicans, but they play the Pelicans one more time. The final game of the season. How much fun will that be? If the final game of the season, there's something on the line, the Lakers play them again. So if the Pelicans drop one more game, the Lakers will hold their fate in their own hands. Think about that. The Pelicans lose one more game because right now the Pelicans are two games up in the loss column on the Lakers. They have 31 losses. The Lakers have 33. If the Pelicans drop one game, the Lakers control their fate. they can play their way into 7 or 8 just by winning their own games. And that's critical because we've been talking about this. We've been looking at the standings, and the Lakers have largely not been able to control their own destiny here. They've been reliant on other teams losing, and those teams have not lost. Now, suddenly the Pelicans have lost enough to where if that final game of the season pulls the Lakers into a tie with the Pelicans, let's say the Lakers and the Pelicans are right there and there's one game between them. The Lakers win that last game, they will own the tiebreaker over New Orleans and they will move ahead. And the way things are situated currently, that would then put the Lakers into either the 8 seed, who knows, maybe the 7 seed, depends on how everything falls. New Orleans loses one more game and the Lakers get to control their own future. That's important. That's important. Now, Phoenix, game and a half back of the Lakers as well. The Lakers also have the tiebreaker over them. So Dallas moving up to fifth is actually not a bad thing for the Lakers. No, it's actually a good thing because you want teams like New Orleans, you want teams like Phoenix to be the teams you're trying to chase down because you can have the tiebreaker over those teams. Now, the Suns have been playing great. Kevin Durant, Devin Booker have really turned it up. So the way they're playing right now, if the Suns keep doing that, I know they have a tough schedule. They still have the most difficult remaining strength of schedule in the NBA, but it's hard to see them losing games the way they're playing right now. So the Lakers are going to have some opportunities here. Sacramento can drop games. And here's what I really like. Look at the remaining schedules. The Lakers, I mean, not easy. I think they have the 7th most difficult schedule remaining. Cleveland, Minnesota on a back-to-back. That's this weekend, Saturday, Sunday. Golden State, Memphis, New Orleans. But here's what I like. The Pelicans. Look at their schedule. Yeah, okay, they play San Antonio. That's a bummer, right? That's probably going to be a win. But you never know. They've got San Antonio. They got Portland. Okay, that's unfortunate. But look who else they're playing. They play Phoenix. They play Sacramento. They play Golden State. So the beauty of that is that someone's going to lose. I mean, the downside, of course, is that someone's going to win. But what we've been seeing now for weeks is Lakers opponents playing other teams, the teams the Lakers are directly competing with, playing everybody else and beating those teams. Just keep winning and winning and winning. The Suns keep stacking up wins. The Warriors keep stacking up wins. Well, guess what? Now they're going to play games against each other. The Lakers' direct competitors are going to play games against each other. Lakers play two of them too. They play Golden State and they play New Orleans. But now they're going to be playing games against each other. It's impossible for either side to escape without a loss. We kept seeing these games, right? Where it's the Suns against the Nuggets. And we go, oh, this is an opportunity. Finally, the Suns are going to lose a game. No. Nuggets play terrible and they drop the game. And the Suns win. And you're frustrated. That's not going to happen when it's Pelicans against Suns. Right? And we may be at a point when the Pelicans play the Suns, which I believe is Sunday. We may be at a point where we're going to be pulling for Phoenix. How's that for a turn of events? But no matter what, one of those teams is going to take a loss. And I know you can flip it and say, well, somebody's going to get a win too. And that's true. But one of those teams is going to get pushed down. And what we've seen for weeks, months, right? The Lakers have been playing great. They're just winning and winning and winning. And in an incredible clip, they're winning more games than they did last season. And they can't get out of the 9 seed. They're stuck because everybody around them keeps winning. So given that all these teams keep winning, the fact that they're going to be playing each other a decent amount of times is a plus in my book because it means someone has to lose finally. So the Pelicans, they get Sacramento. Okay. One of those teams has to lose there. They get Golden State. Great. Right. Bummer if the Pelicans win. Okay. But if the Warriors win, that pushes the Pelicans down a little bit. Good things happening either way. The Suns go, look at the schedule for the Suns, Minnesota, Pelicans, Clippers, Sacramento, Minnesota. Now, there is a downside to this, though. You look at those two games against the Clippers, the middle of the week next week, and I have a feeling the Clippers might tank those games. The Clippers just picked up a big win against the Nuggets last night, and While I don't want to see Denver in the one seed, the ideal would probably be Denver in the three seed. But at this point, everything is so close in the standings at the top and in the middle here where the Lakers are at. It's going to be really hard to try to maneuver your way into a non-Denver matchup. And I know there's some of you out there who say, oh, I'd rather see Denver in round one, try to get them now. I completely disagree. I know there's the Nick Wright theory out there that, oh, no, you know, the Lakers need to see Denver in round one. Lakers will be healthier. They'll be in more of a rhythm then. I could not disagree more. I would rather see the Nuggets in the Western Conference Finals. I would rather the Nuggets have to go through two teams in round one and round two that could potentially knock them off. I'd rather take that chance, and I'd rather let Jared Vanderbilt play his way back up to strength and hopefully be good to go for the Western Conference Finals. That would be my preference. But you've got an argument to make too if you'd prefer to see Denver round one. I would just prefer to see that matchup in the West Finals again. But, and really the Lakers have, let's not get too far ahead of ourselves. The Lakers have to get out of the play-in, which they're almost certainly going to be in anyway. But the Clippers, by winning their game against Denver, while it does help push Denver down, it also solidifies the Clippers in that four seed in the West. I mean, you can see they've got a two-game gap over the Mavs. They're not going to catch up to OKC. So, yeah, I think the Clippers are probably going to wind up in the four seed and maybe not have a lot to play for by the time they play the Suns. So that's something to keep an eye on, too. Might the Clippers rest some guys in those games? That would be unfortunate, but that would be a very Clipper thing to do, especially if they knew they could hurt the Lakers by doing that. But the Kings, they got New York, so they played that game. Boston, they've got Boston tomorrow, but Boston's locked in. I have a feeling they're going to rest a bunch of guys, so that's not ideal. Brooklyn, OKC, the Pelicans, though. So the Kings get Brooklyn. That's not ideal. They get OKC. That's tough. They get the Pelicans. Somebody's got to lose there. They get Phoenix. Somebody's got to lose there. They finish with Portland. All right. The Warriors got the win over Houston. Unfortunately, that Houston's done now. They're not going to get the 10 seed. They get Dallas tomorrow. Hopefully Dallas or today. Hopefully Dallas beats them. That's what the Lakers would prefer to see. Utah again. That's a bummer. That's three wins right there. But then they also get the Lakers. Look, Lakers, you don't want the Warriors to catch you? Great. Take care of business. Beat them. Beat them that game. Beat the Warriors that game. It's what you have to do. And then you get Warriors Pelicans. Somebody's going to lose. So again, when I look at the standings, things are actually setting up pretty nicely for the Lakers. Pretty nicely for LA right now to move up. Now, the key is the Lakers have to keep winning, and they've been winning a lot lately, but their schedule gets much more difficult. Much more difficult. I mean, Cleveland, Minnesota back-to-back, that's going to be tough. That's going to be tough to win both those games. It might even be tough to win one. Look, the Cavs got blown out the other night by the Suns, but the Suns shot an insane percentage from three. You're not going to count on that happening night in, night out. I think the Cavs are better than what they showed that game against Phoenix, and I think the Lakers are going to have a fight on their hands on Saturday, and I'll preview that game in tomorrow's show. But the schedule's not easy for the Lakers, but opportunity is finally here. Opportunity, well, it's almost anyway. Opportunity is right here. It's going to be here for the taking. The Lakers, because some of these teams will have to lose, if the Lakers are able to keep stringing together wins, and again, they don't have an easy schedule, but if they're able to keep stringing together wins, especially that last game against the Pelicans, that could wind up being critical. There could be a lot on the line in that game. The Lakers can keep winning. They are in a position where they can move up. They just got to be ready to pounce when some of these teams inevitably, because they're going to be playing each other, start losing some games. So, not a bad spot to be in. Most important thing is the Lakers have got to keep winning. If they can do that, they can play their way out of the ninth seed. I think things are starting to look up as long as they can keep winning. All right, last thing I want to get into today, the playoff rotation. and I'm not going to spend a ton of time on this because we're going to have a lot of time to really get into it. But one of the things that we want to be keeping an eye on this time of year, it's what are the rotations really going to be? Are they going to be solidified into something? Because as much as we talk about the bench, and the bench has really been in a spotlight in a negative way, especially since that Wizards game, because they were so bad, especially the you know, third string guys. That was rough. You know, having LeBron and AD having to come back into the game, that's embarrassing. Let's be honest. That's embarrassing. It's embarrassing that they had to do that. But the good thing is the bench doesn't tend to matter as much in the postseason. The Lakers bench has not been good. They've been struggling. They've been particularly struggling to score the ball. And by the Lakers bench, I'm talking about Jackson Hayes, Torian Prince, Spencer Dinwiddie. That's the Lakers bench right now. Now, Max Christie, has he been part of the bench? Depending on who's available. Cam Reddish, he was a DNP coach's decision last game. We'll see if that's a sign of things to come or if that's more he was away for personal reasons and he wasn't, you know, ready to get back in there. Gabe Vincent is now becoming part of that. So we know what the starting five is. And given that Jared Vanderbilt is still not back, starting five being LeBron, Anthony Davis, D'Angelo Russell, Austin Reeves, Rui Hachimura. Jared Vanderbilt still not being back, and we're talking about just a handful of games left in the season, I think it's too late to change the starting lineup. If it was a week ago and he was coming back, okay, right? I'd be in on put in Vando in the starting five. Rui's been playing great. This is not a demotion, but we could really use Rui with the bench unit, helping them with their scoring, because that's where they're really struggling, right? Jackson Hayes, Torian Prince, Spencer Dinwiddie. Dinwiddie hasn't quite got his offense going, at least with any consistency. Gabe Vincent is still, you know, figuring out his way back. So the scoring has been an issue. But we're so close to the postseason starting anyway. I don't think you want to make that shift now. If Vando comes back and he comes back with two games to play, it's too late. It's too late, and this starting unit has shown a lot of success. And if Jared Vanderbilt does come back, and let's say best case scenario, the Lakers get extremely fortunate and he's at 90% of what he used to be, which you see the footage of Vando kind of like working out and stuff, and he's shooting flat footed and all that. Like, if Vando, a lot of his skill came from shooting the ball, you'd feel maybe a little bit better about it. Because shooting is a skill you can kind of keep up with. But so much of Jared Vanderbilt, what he does defensively, it's based on his athleticism, how quick he is for a guy his size and his hustle, and that he's flying all over the floor and he's got this incredible work rate. Those are all things that are going to take a hit with this injury, and it's going to take him some time to come back. So I don't think he's even going to be, you know, maybe he's 70% of himself when he gets back. And so if that's the case, plus your starting lineup has been playing well, they've got a pretty solid net rating, according to Cleaning the Glass, that group, LeBron, AD, D'Lo, Reeves, Rui, that group is a plus 7 and change in net rating. So they've been good. So I'm not changing that right now. I would shift the rotation a little bit so that Rui can spend some more minutes with those bench guys. But again, you're going to cut down to probably a 7, 8, maybe 9-man rotation tops in the playoffs. And 9 is really stretching it. So who are those guys? A lot of it depends on Jared Vanderbilt. Does he come back? Is he healthy? But if Vando is not back, you've got your 5 starters. And then we're Torian Prince? Probably, look, let's face it, whether he should or shouldn't, Darvin Ham's probably going to use Torian Prince. And Torian's been fine. I don't have a problem with Torian. Spencer Dinwiddie, and then it's Jackson Hayes or Gabe Vincent, depending, I think, on what the opponent calls for. If the opponent's playing small a lot, maybe it's Gabe. If he's not, it's Jackson Hayes. Now again, Jared Vanderbilt comes in and this shifts everything. Jared Vanderbilt comes back, maybe Torian's minutes aren't there, because remember, postseason, LeBron, AD, D'Lo, Austin, pencil them in for like 40 minutes. That's probably what they're going to play in the playoffs. Everybody, starters' minutes are going to go up. Benches don't have to be quite as deep. You're not using them as much. You've got to win games. And so minutes, role, usage, all that kind of stuff, it all increases. So what I'm looking for right now is how things get solidified. The starting five, it is what it is. That's going to stay. Who is going to play their way into those other three spots if we're talking an eight-man rotation? Who are those other guys? And again, if Jared Vanderbilt is back, he should get one of those spots. I don't think there's any question there. But after that, who is it? Torian? Dinwiddie? Does Gabe Vincent get himself back into a rhythm? He's a known playoff performer. And then also, for as much as we, you know, worry about the bench and their ability to score the basketball, remember that the bench unit right now, based on all of the advanced metrics and everything, you want to dig into the different lineup data. If LeBron is on the floor with the bench, they're okay. They're just fine. If D'Angelo Russell is on the floor with the bench, they have a negative net rating, but it's not much. It's not, and I'm talking about Hayes, Torian, Dinwiddie. If D'Lo's out there with that group and LeBron's off, AD's off, they still have a negative net rating, but it's not, oh, I'm sorry, AD is on with that group. They have a negative net rating, but it's not bad. It's not, it's like minus one or something like that. So the key is with this bench unit that you've got a scoring ball handler, LeBron or D'Lo. Essentially, you can't play your bench unit right now without LeBron or D'Lo out there with them. And if D'Lo's on the floor, AD has to be out there as well with that group in order for it to work. Well, when we're in the postseason, you're not going to have the all bench unit nearly as often, right? Because again, everybody's, the starters, their minutes are all going to go up. So a lot of people are alarmed by the Lakers bench. I'm not as worried about it because I think it's easier when the minutes of D'Lo, Austin, LeBron, AD, Rui, his minutes should go up. When all of their minutes go up, you're relying on your bench less. And we've seen that this bench can be okay when they've got either LeBron on the floor with them or D'Lo and AD, which I think is you have more capability to do that in an actual playoff game than you would in the regular season. So again, keep an eye out. Who are those three other guys going to be in the rotation? And then the bench itself. If the bench is underperforming, it's not something, it's not good. It's not good, but it's also not the end of the world because I think the Lakers will have an easier time mitigating that issue in the postseason than they do right now in the regular season, just because of the minutes, the roles, all that kind of stuff going up for your high usage guys in the playoffs. All right, that's going to do it for me today. I do appreciate all of you for joining. Make sure that you do turn on the notifications over on YouTube. That way you get notified every time we put out a new video. And of course, give us that 5-star rating and review over on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you listen to podcasts. Till next time, everybody. See ya and stay safe.